Hi, Steve. It's Bill and it's Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200. This is the Thursday version of our show. It's jam-packed with stuff. Noted pet expert Steve Dale will be here. Dave Itzkoff, who has a book about Robin Williams, and then our friend Dean Richards. All in one show, Wendy. All in one show.
Is this a new Robin Williams book just out?
Yeah. Yeah, it just came out.
And he's a New York Times reporter?
Yes.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. I guess one of the points, and we'll certainly discuss this with him, is people assumed because Robin Williams was so filled with laughter and he brought laughter to so many people that his life just must have been just a bed of roses, always laughing, always having fun, and it was not that way.
Isn't that common, though, in a lot of entertainers and a lot of comics?
I would imagine, yeah. I think so, probably.
How could you be so funny when you didn't have so much tragedy behind you?
First of all, thank you. But second of all, I realized early on, like when I started doing stand-up, a bunch of the guys I worked with right out of the box were so happy and giddy on stage, and then off stage they were just miserable.
I know a lot of people like that.
Isn't that strange?
Even some people in radio.
Yes. Yes.
What you see is what you get with us, pretty much.
Yeah. It's yeah, it is, right?
Yeah.
It really is. Did you get any, like, jolt of emotion? Like, when I got the job here 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, one of the weird thrills was just pulling into the parking lot every day and knowing that this was what it is, WGN. So that parking lot, even though it's silly because it's all it is a place that my car stays for a couple hours while I'm working here. But every day when I would pull in, I go, this is the WGN parking lot where people who work at WGN park the cars. And then today I realized, well, that's the end of that.
End of an era.
Yeah.
I know.
My car wept.
It's pretty cute because you were here and working and doing a great job overnights and filling in for Johnny B. And I would listen to you while I was going to another radio station. And when it was rumored that we were going to be reunited, one of the first things you said was, we have our own parking lot.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? That's unheard of.
That's the big time.
It was pretty cool.
And that is such prime real estate. I mean, I get, for people who don't know, they're going to turn that into a giant building, a huge building.
Which they should.
And yeah, because every other lot that was like that 10 or 15 years ago around the city pretty much has become a giant building. So it's amazing that it lasted this long. But I got a little overly nostalgic today as I pulled in going, this is the last time.
It's amazing because where does everyone park now if everything has
Elmhurst?
Become a building?
I'm walking from LaGrange.
That's it.
Walk
it's the only
in every
thing
day.
You can do.
We soon will have driverless cars that will drop us off.
Yep.
And no, I'm not kidding you.
No,
this
you're
is
right.
What, this is what they're saying.
That would be so
that
nice.
That will drop us off and then go park themselves somewhere like in Indiana for the day.
Yep.
And then come back to pick us up.
I will manage to still be a backseat driver
with
the driverless car. Yeah.
Do you know,
buddy, you should have turned earlier. Where's your signal?
What's the guy on Jimmy Kimmel's show who's like his sidekick? I can't think of his name for some reason.
I don't watch it enough to know.
So the other day, Jimmy Kimmel played a trick on him and made him... He was under the impression he was shooting a TV commercial in the back of a car. And then the woman who was driving the car got out, and then the car sped away and drove around Los Angeles while his friend was in the back seat of the car. And I thought to myself, I know that it's becoming a reality that we'll have driverless cars, but I'm so not ready for it, and I would be a little bit nervous to be back there. He handled it really well, but I still, like, in my car, I've got that thing on the dashboard where if you're backing up, it shows you the camera view of where you're backing up, and I don't trust it. Even though I know it's real, there's a camera back there showing me a panoramic view of what I'm backing up into, but I still, even with that camera, I still look behind me every time. There's never been one time that I've backed up and not looked behind me.
My car's too big to turn around and see. I can't really. I mean, I guess I could see if someone's there, but I trust the camera. It's those lane things in the new cars that beep in your blind spot indicator.
Yeah.
Those things are awesome.
Yeah.
But then if you have one car with them and one without, you get lazy. I still shoulder check even though I have those blind spot indicators.
But let's say the boss has said, hey, Wendy, as part of our move, we've arranged this deal with, you name the car company, they're going to send a driverless car to come and get you for the rest of the summer. Just come by your house, pick you up, you sit in the back seat. Nobody's driving the car. The car drives itself. Would you be okay with that, or would that scare you? It would scare you, right?
I get car sick if I'm not driving, so that would be a problem.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah, I get motion sickness.
Yeah, and that's with a human being behind the wheel.
Right.
How about if you pretend you could sit behind the wheel?
In those grocery carts that the kids sit in?
Yeah. Be like a driving placebo.
Okay, right. I could do that then.
Yeah.
All right. I'm up for
then
it.
Then you'll do it.
Yeah.
Because then you say, I have a failsafe in case the driverless car goes renegade on me. I can still control it somehow.
Yeah. If, you know, our internet can be hacked into, who's to say that the driverless cars can't be hacked into? I'm not kidding.
I think about that all the time. Because that would be sheer chaos if somebody goes, we figured out a program to where we take over that.
And drive into buildings or mow people down.
Right.
Are you talking about Guillermo Rodriguez?
Guillermo. That's right. The guy.
From Jimmy Kimmel.
You'd have to name the car anyway. Even if it was driverless, you'd have to name it so you can yell at something. You know, what do
right.
you say? You
gotta, come on, Mark.
Yeah.
Drive safely. You know? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, but what if it takes a route you don't like? Have you ever had that happen with a cab driver where you feel like there's a quicker route and you're like, is there any way you can just go this way? You can't deviate from the path. I don't want it. I think we should have had it like the Jetsons where you get to work and you fold your car up into a briefcase.
I think somebody was working on that. I don't know how deep they got into it, but I do think somebody was working on that.
Some of those cars, those little minis, are so small you could actually pick it up and bring it into work with you.
Yep.
Huh. Yeah. Something to think about.
You need rubber and Velcro.
That's all you need. You're covered. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show.
More great ideas like this.
It's a think tank, Wendy. That's what it is, a think tank. 312-981-7200 if you want to swim in our think tank. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Speaking of the news, did you see who's leaving?
Yes. I love her, too.
Kathy Brock, at the end of June, that's in a month, is retiring from Channel 7. Very nice lady. Did you ever meet her?
Yes.
Really
and
nice lady.
And she's gorgeous. She's smart. Yeah. Prettier in real life. She's amazing.
Yeah.
It's weird about people retiring at a relatively young age, because when we were growing up, you had your Fahey Flynn who was on. Although I bet he wasn't really that old. He just looked it.
Fahey Flynn was 26 years old when he retired. But the times were different. You aged faster back then because of the war.
I was surprised. Everything's because of the war. That's what I love about you.
Yeah.
Did you answer that on every essay question?
Well, I told you, my grandmother, whenever we'd ask her a question about anything, she would give an answer, and then she'd go, because of the war. And we'd always just nod. Oh, all right. Well, it must be true. She said it.
Look at the traditions you carry on.
I know.
I was surprised when Ron Majors retired, because I thought, no, he's too young.
Right.
And then Mark Sapelsa, come on, you can't retire.
Younger and younger and younger.
Kathy Brock.
Yep.
Linda Yu.
Yeah, she's already retired.
That's what I mean.
So
all these people.
Do we know who will replace Kathy Brock?
No. Why are you vying for it?
Yeah, I'm going to send a demo tape over.
I would love to see that.
I think it's Ernie Imbroglio.
The baseball great Ernie Imbroglio? Right. Oh, that's an interesting call.
They're going to choose another Brock Imbroglio
trade. Wow. That's a great call for them.
Boy, I now know what it's like to feel left out of a conversation.
One time, this is a strange story, but I'll tell you anyway. My daughters were telling me that they had a teacher at their school who is the son of Mrs. Brock's, right? And I said, really? Because I know her sons, and I don't think they're old enough to teach in high school. No, he insists. He tells everybody he's Kathy Brock's son. So the next time I saw Kathy, because I was working at WLS, I go, hey, one of your sons is teaching my daughter in high school. And she laughed. She thought I was kidding. And I go, she said, no, my sons are in school. They're not teaching school. They're in school. So I went back and I told my daughter, and she came back and said, no, he insists it's Kathy Brock's son.
Has he been arrested since?
It's funny you say that. He didn't last much longer on the job because he was making up a lot of things at work that weren't true. So he wasn't arrested, but he was removed midway through the year for telling stories that weren't completely true, which you and I have made a living at.
Yeah, I know. I'm related to Tom Snyder.
What?
You're not. No, but I love him.
You're the Snyders,
man,
of Hanover Pretzel people, right?
And the girl Wendy from Wendy's.
Yeah, I know you're the offspring of them. I knew that.
Who are you related to famously?
Nobody. Nobody.
You paved the way yourself.
Yeah, it's me. I'm a trailblazer.
Yes, you are.
I'm a Portland trailblazer.
No, you're not.
That's very sad news coming out of Channel 7, because I thought Kathy Brock would be there for years and years and years, but she's decided it's time to rest.
See, I thought about that. First of all, I haven't saved my money, so I'll probably never retire.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a career that you can really do forever.
Right.
And it's enjoyable.
Right.
I mean, if I didn't have this, I'd have nothing in my life.
So you got to stay doing it. You have to stay doing it.
Yeah, but so you're not ever, you don't think about when you're going to retire?
Honestly, I really don't.
I never do either.
I mean, I feel like just, talking till I drop.
Well,
which I hope I do on the air, because that would be
good
great
for ratings. Yep. We'll make the columns.
Finally, Robert Feder will write about us.
We'll be in that PJ Bednarski column that all the kids love.
What was the other guy? Gary
Deeb.
Gary Deeb.
You'll make Gary
yeah.
Deeb's column. Yep. You'll be in all
Gary
of those.
Gary Deeb.
And who is the guy, Aaron somebody years and years and years ago?
Oh, Aaron, not Aaron Freeman, Aaron Gold.
Aaron Gold.
Aaron Gold will be in Aaron wrote Gold's the ink column. Kathy O'Malley yeah. was his secretary. That's how she got started.
Oh, that's right.
My dad was friends with him in high school. They went to high school together.
His son was my teacher.
I think now I believe you're lying. I'm pretty sure you're lying now. Also, we don't have time to talk about this. Actually, we should discuss this on the stream later, because this is a great story. Did you see that Sesame Street is suing a movie? There's a movie coming out called The Happy Time Murders. And if you've not seen the trailer for this, your eyes will not believe what they are seeing.
I haven't
seen
the trailer.
You will not believe this. So what happens in this movie is Melissa McCarthy plays a detective, and she and another detective, who is a Muppet, solve this crime spree about a puppet that's gone completely out of his mind, and he's murdering other puppets, Muppets. They look just like the Sesame Street Muppets. And it's directed by Brian Henson, who's the son of Jim Henson. But people within the Muppet industry are furious because they say, you're taking something that's beloved and you're making a mockery out of it. And when you see the trailer, there's stuff in there that is the dirtiest, strangest stuff you've ever seen, and it's Muppets doing it. You can't believe what you're seeing.
I agree with that. However, if Henson's in charge of it, then...
Well, that's the problem, is the Henson family is so at odds over this, because they say, what are you doing? We are who we are because of Muppets.
You can't turn on them.
And all I've seen is a 2-minute trailer, so I don't know how horrible or fantastic it is. I just know that very rarely when you're watching a movie trailer, do you just go, what am I seeing? It doesn't make sense how sick it is. But I found myself laughing, so, you know, maybe it's going to pay off.
Now I'm intrigued. I got to watch the trailer. We'll talk about that on the stream.
Yeah, and normally I would say we'll put a link to it on our Facebook page. I don't know.
You don't want to get in trouble from the Muppets. Big Bird's going to come take you out.
Yeah, I don't want any Muppet trouble. I'm not ready for any Muppet trouble. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then you know who's joining us, Wendy, speaking of Muppets, noted pet expert.
You are so... Why do you encourage him, Steve Dale?
Noted pet expert Steve Dale will be joining us, so we'll get his take on this whole Muppet controversy. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
I get it, black dog. That's a pet.
That was fast. I didn't think you'd get it at all, but you got it in a second.
I didn't think you'd come up with that. Way to rock and roll. I'm giving you the devil's horns.
All right, I'll take them. Hey, look who's here. Speaking of the devil's horns, it's noted pet expert Steve Dale, our friend from the world of pets.
Yes, I'm excited to be here.
Hi, Steve.
And I just got in last night from New York City.
Are your paws tired?
Ba-da-bum. And my flight was delayed, but I made it back.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, which I'm happy about. And... what was I doing in New York City?
What were you doing in New York City?
Interesting you would ask that question. So this is so exciting, and it was an honor for me to moderate a panel of experts. And in the audience were public officials in New York media, cameras pointed at me, the New York Times was there.
Yes.
All these folks were there, and you're probably wondering, why were they there?
Why were they there?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were there because...
Play along.
Oh, yeah, why?
This was an announcement of the first ever... domestic violence shelter. So a shelter mostly for abused women and often their children that allows pets.
Oh. That is key.
Called Pal's Place. It is key because without being able to leave the violent situation with their pet, many people won't leave.
Yep.
And the perpetrator often threatens their pets. First, the violence is upon the pet in the first place. Interestingly enough, often cats more than dogs, we think, are more often the victims of animal abuse. So if there is abuse to children or spousal abuse in the home, and likely there are both going on, there probably, if there's a pet in the home, and most homes have pets, there's probably abuse happening to the animal as well. So what do you do if you're caught in that situation? You want to go somewhere where the animal is allowed, and most places don't have that around the country. New York.
I'm surprised it took this long.
Well, New York Urban Resource Institute has had places for quite some time. They're a pioneer in that field. In Chicago, we don't have anywhere like that. There are other issues in Chicago that prevent that from happening. We just don't have enough beds. And it's shocking how few beds we have in this city. I don't remember the exact number, but it's between 100 and 200 or somewhere in there for the entire city of Chicago for victims of domestic violence.
What role did you play in having this happen? Because I'm curious why they, and I'm not saying that it was wrong to have you come out and speak, but why did they decide to have you come out and speak?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Just curious. They just called you and you did it.
No. I did it before. So a couple of years ago when they made the announcement that we're going to have some places, a lot of places actually, in our facilities, the Urban Resource Institute.
Yeah.
I've written about this topic. I'm kind of passionate about it. And they asked me to participate as a moderator. They had experts who came out that wrote so many papers about this. So the guy who, for example, his name is Phil Arkow, suggested there is a link that is now well known between violence to people and violence to animals in a household. He's the guy that figured all that out. I was just, you know, honored to be there with all of these incredible experts that were in the room.
Steve, good for you.
Very good for you. How does this tie in? There's been this this cause and effect study for years and years and years with people who do horrible things later on in life.
Jeffrey Dahmer. This type.
Well, as young people, they tend to torture animals.
Yeah, so. it's a fallacy to think that everyone that tortures animals is going to be a mass murderer, or that all mass murderers once tortured animals. Having said that, the overwhelming majority of those mass murderers began the practice on animals. I mean, that is true.
Well, you have to have a screw loose somewhere to hurt something that isn't hurting you.
It's do it on purpose.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's one thing to defend yourself. I get it, but...
Yeah. So this is good news because it will save human lives. It will save animal lives because what happens to the animals? I mean, they're often... When the person finally musters the courage to leave, which isn't easy...
No.
And if they have no place to put their animals, they have two choices in most communities. One is... There are places where there are foster families, and Anti-Cruelty Society does that in Chicago, but they run out of families at some point that can foster these animals. So that's one possibility. The other is they just have to give up their pet to a shelter. And we talked to one survivor that was there, among the people there that spoke, and spoke with incredible art. I mean, they were so articulate, so wise, these women that had done nothing wrong.
Yeah, it's not their fault.
No, not at all. And that's the thing. There are so many misconceptions still that somehow it's my fault, you know, kind of thing. But they don't have resources. Well, now in New York City, there is an incredible resource that'll save animal lives and save human lives as well. I mean, one person said that she really believed this saved her life. Because it's what, when she heard about this, she said, okay, I can go out with the entire family, because pets are family members. And she believes she might have lost her life to this guy. So
it's disgusting.
The good news here is that this is probably a model, and when it goes
they'll do more of these, right? You are totally right. Yeah. That's the hope. The hope is that this will be, and I believe it will be, a model for other cities to follow. And after all, as I said on the panel, if it can be done in New York City, it could be done anywhere.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
It's not fair to do this because I don't even know if you're aware of the story. I had Jasmine print this up. I saw this morning. I know in the past, Steve, you've been a huge advocate. There's certain animals, the pit bull especially, that that pit bulls have been involved from time to time in horrible incidents. One just happened in Miami where a pit bull mauled a child, an eight-month-old baby, and the baby ended up dying. Tell me again why you're such a proponent of the pit bull, because I know these stories don't happen often, but when they do, I can't think of anything more horrendous.
But it's not just a pit bull. It's a dog, right?
Yes, and you just got the answer. So this dog identified as a pit bull, if we do the genetic testing, odds are overwhelming that this dog is a mixed breed dog, first of all. So what is a pit bull? It's a dog that has a certain look that we identify, you know, those big jaws and the big head and the big shoulders. They're generally of a certain size, which is wide ranging, by the way. It could be, you know, a 15 or 18 pound dog that we call a pit bull to a 45 pound dog. But it's a dog that we look at and identify as a pit bull. But when we do the genetic testing on these dogs, they're a mix of who knows what. You know, it's a combination of all sorts of different things.
Right.
That's the first thing. So if you ban a pit bull, what are you banning? You're really banning mixed breed dogs that have a certain look. Does that make any sense? And to me, it doesn't make any sense. Secondly, the most popular dog in America is probably that dog that I just talked about, the dog that looks like a pit bull. So when you go to animal shelters across the country, mm-hmm. that is the dog you most often see.
Because are afraid to adopt them, too, because of the bad rep.
That's part of it, but totally right. But part of it is there are so many. So that, you know, so if we look at dog bite numbers, the dogs that most often would be responsible would be not the Chesapeake Bay Retriever, in part because there aren't many of them. There are a lot of dogs that we call pit bull type dogs. They're just simply, it is all the all-American dog right now by the numbers. So Miami has actually banned pit bulls, and look what happened. You know, so breed bans don't do any good. We know that.
And this was the owner's dog that mauled this poor 8-month-old in a bouncy chair. Because you have to train a dog. You have to train a dog.
Yes. So we know why there are serious dog attacks. Dogs we call pit bulls or any kind of dog. And I can go through, according to the Centers for Disease Control.
They feel threatened,
and the American Veterinary Medical Association, the reasons. In this case, all I know is the newspaper report I'm looking at. My guess is that there wasn't adult supervision. And whether you have, I don't care what kind of dog it is, a little Chihuahua to a Boston Terrier to a Labrador Retriever to a dog we call a pit bull to other animals, a cat, a ferret, a parrot, guinea pig, with a 8-month-old, there ought to be adult supervision.
Sure.
And we know that that is one of the instances. All right, we look at why there are serious dog attacks.
Yeah.
Sometimes we know why. And sometimes, some of the time, it's because there is not adult supervision. Some of the time, and I can go through all the list of reasons here, but none of the time, according to the CDC, the American Veterinary Medical Association, all of the major humane organizations, on and on and on, none of the time, it's the breed.
Yeah.
I just feel they get a bad rap. There's a real funny Portlandia where Carrie gets a pit bull and everybody, like, clears the street when she's walking the dog. Oh, you have one of those. I know Brian Bickle and his wife do a great job.
Yes.
It's they get a bad rap. I've known a couple of pit bulls that were sweet as can be, and I've known huskies that are really mean and German shepherds, but
it's a matter of socialization. It's a matter of genetics, all these things, but it's not a matter of breed. And as I say, this isn't even a breed. Now, certainly breed predisposition does matter. There's no question about that. So a toy poodle is more likely to have a fun time and want to learn little circus tricks because that's what they were bred to do.
Mm-hmm.
A golden retriever is more likely to fetch because that is what they were bred to do. So breed does matter in that sense, but these are mixed breed dogs.
All right. That's Steve Dale, noted pet expert.
So
Steve Dale.
It's terrible.
Have a question or comment? We're 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Do you have a pet crocodile?
We used to have a crocodile, yeah.
After a while.
You had a pet gibbon.
Yeah, Peanut the Gibbon.
Yeah.
Who I didn't know you had a crocodile. Say hello to you, by the way.
Thank you. Yep. Peanut's one of my best friends.
Yep.
A Muppet.
Yep. Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. You two are kibitzing. That's what you're doing.
We don't know where we're going. But you know what? I've known you for how long?
Oh, all my life, Steve.
Well, not that long.
20 plus years.
Probably, yeah.
20 years.
So, and we have never made an appearance together.
A joint appearance? We never have.
No, and
we've
it's about time.
It.
Not, well, I don't remember.
He's talked about it.
I don't remember that conversation, but we ought to do this. You would love it.
What is
this
it?
This is your dream come true.
What is it, Steve? I'm in.
The Meow Meetup.
Oh, is that coming up?
It's a convention of cat lovers. July 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
You just committed to do it. It's at the Donald Stevens Convention Center.
In Rosemont?
Yeah, this is a
right
big
down the,
deal.
The road.
My throat just closed up.
Yeah. Sure.
There will be cat videos. There'll be speakers speaking about cats. I am one of the keynote speakers. The other is Becky Robinson from Alley Cat Allies.
Oh, they got Becky.
Uh-huh. I know. It wasn't easy to get Becky. She is the primary supporter and has been a pioneer in the world of trap, neuter, return, of which is something
that's
you
important.
Feel passionately about.
The Meow Mix cat will be there.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Well, some of the internet cat stars will be there.
Really?
Yeah, you can get their paw-tographs. So you will be so excited to do. I can see that you're thrilled already.
Yeah.
They're going to have kitty bingo.
Oh, they'll have kitty bingo.
Kitty That's, yoga?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to have a cat
I'm
cafe.
Rolling my eyes at this. Can you hear me rolling my eyes, listeners?
A little bit, yeah.
I'm so excited about this. So that is July 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
You will see me there on the 21st.
I can't believe you support Kitty Bingo. Is that where they spin him in that barrel?
No!
Orange Tabby, be Orange Tabby.
I don't even know what it's about, to tell you the truth. But I've seen Kitty Yoga. In fact, WGN, you know, for the outings WGN has.
Yes.
And I'm sure you're going to go to this. The Cat Cafe in Chicago, Windy Kitty Cat Cafe, has cat yoga. And Stephanie arranged for people, you're probably going to lead this field trip, to go and do cat yoga. It's in a couple weeks.
If I agree to this, Steve, I'll need you to take me in for a CAT scan because something has gone horribly wrong with me.
Why don't you two take it on the road? You can go to the Catskills.
Yeah.
Oh. What a bum.
Wendy with the home run in the last inning.
I know. I'm not going to even
Steve, can I think
try.
About that? I thought about it. No.
It might change your mind.
I might.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about one other thing.
You lost someone special to you.
Yes, thank you. So on one of my frequent guests on the show is our county veterinarian, Dr. Donna Alexander, and I've known her for a very long time. She lives fairly close to where I live, and she doesn't like Uber or Lyft. She takes a taxi down early in the morning when my show is, and then I typically drive her home because we live not all that far from one another. I dropped her off on Sunday, 2 weeks ago, and then I get a call on Monday morning from her saying that I'm in a hotel now. I said, pardon me? She said, I'm staying at a hotel now because not long after you dropped me off, my house caught on fire. Her kitchen caught on fire. And there was so much damage. And that's what I said, Wendy. I had the same response. Are you okay? I knew she didn't currently have any pets, but I was concerned about her things. She said, I'm insured. I'll be okay. What's most important is all the other cats living in a condo building. All the other cats got out. And I'm calling you because I wanted to tell you that you can train your cat to a carrier, which I know you know, Steve, but I taught my neighbors how to do it. And I was so happy that they all did it and they got out. And I want you to write that story. Well, I never thought that just days later, I'd be writing her obituary.
Oh.
She was found. I know she had some health problems, and she was found dead. She was going to show up at a low-cost rabies vaccine clinic. And Cook County, like a lot of places around the country, they hold these clinics for people who can now get low-cost rabies vaccines. And she personally would vaccinate each and every animal. And when she didn't come, they figured out eventually what happened. But
she survived the fire and sad.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Was her death related in some way to the fire?
I don't believe so. As I said, she was having some health issues, and I guess it kind of all caught up with her. But she did so much for Chicago. When the dog flu hit, she happened to be in the studio on a particular Sunday when I was beginning to hear from listeners, from all of you, that my dogs are coughing. And I was hearing from veterinarians that something was happening. We kind of talked off the air, assuming it might be the dog flu. The strain of dog flu, it turned out to be, neither one of us knew ever existed. You know, so that came out later. And we worked together to do things like close the dog parks for the benefit of dogs so they wouldn't be, and to warn, and she did a lot of media. And I will say, without her, many more dogs would have died, or at least would have gotten sick in the Chicago area. Huge proponent of rabies vaccines.
What a pet hero she was.
Yeah, involved in changing many state laws. Some are on the governor's desk as we speak. Oh. And I'm grateful that I got to talk to her just, you know, one last time. But
sorry for losing a friend. Yeah. That's awful. Yeah. Can I ask you really quick? We only have a minute. Somebody texted in and really wants to know about the leash law. Oh, boy, do they want to know about the leash laws.
Yeah.
What can you tell us?
Is there a leash law? Because people should have a dog on a leash.
Yes. That's the short answer. I mean, there's a law. And unless you're at a dog park or a dog-friendly area of some sort, that dog needs to be on a leash. It's for the benefit of the dog. And many people think, well, my dog is perfectly trained. And some of those people are right.
Yep.
But is that fair to people who are afraid of dogs that are walking down the street? And my biggest concern are squirrels or other things that dog might see and run off. You think your dog is trained, but a squirrel comes along and maybe not so much.
My little Kona is about 4 months old. He graduated from puppy class, and tonight we start intermediate class. But I have to tell you, you can tell the difference between a puppy and a grown dog. There was an opossum in our yard last night, and when I let Tiki or Kona out into the backyard, he ran up to it, and before I could grab him, he didn't go to attack it. He thought it was another puppy and was going to play with it. Thankfully, he slowed down, and I could grab him because it was daytime. I'm thinking this could have been a rabid opossum out in the day.
I guess, yes.
But a big, you know, Tiki would have just gone and destroyed it. Kona just wanted to go up and go, who's this weird-looking, ugly puppy I want to play with?
Yeah, possums actually have big teeth, and dogs don't always win, you know. So you had the graduation. Who was your commencement speaker?
I'll get you next time.
Bill and me could do that together.
That would have been fun.
He just wants to hang with you, Bill.
Sure, yeah. We'll figure something out.
Sorry for your loss. Thank you for coming in.
It's Chicago's loss.
Where do we hear you?
6:30 Sunday morning, and we are talking about the human-animal bond. A friend of mine wrote a book on that topic, a Chicagoan, and she'll be right here, and Beal will in this studio, or maybe another studio, I'm not sure, but she'll be on WGN.
Thanks, Steve. That's noted pet expert Steve Dale. That's who that is. We'll take a quick break, then get you some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We don't know what the next man's going through. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest, Dave Itzkoff, has just put together a book that I cannot wait to read. It's called Robin, about the life and times of Robin Williams. Dave, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on today.
I have to say this right at the very beginning. In my lifetime, there have been a handful of incidents where somebody has passed away that I've never met, just somebody who means something to me. John Belushi was like that. Freddie Prinz was like that. And when you find out that these people are no longer amongst us, like Robin Williams, it just tears at you. It rips your heart out. Boy, what a loss.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote his obituary for the New York Times, and I had, interviewed him on a few occasions, and I'm right there with you. I mean, the experience of really trying to just write a piece about him with the knowledge that he was dead, it was very difficult and really bittersweet. It was just so sad.
And not only was it sad to hear about his death, but in the way in which he died, it was just a shock to many of us, all of us, I might even say.
Yeah, I think that if you perceive him as somebody either who was essentially joyous or at least got a lot of pleasure from bringing joy to other people and to then kind of come to an understanding that there was a lot more pain and suffering in that person's life, it's a very hard thing to reconcile.
For people who don't know, Robin took his own life. Now, do you think, Dave, that if he hadn't had, he wasn't suffering from the illness that he was suffering from, he would have taken his own life? Or what do you think?
Well, it's hard to know, but I mean, certainly the disease that he had, and this was not fully understood or discovered until after his death, and an autopsy was conducted that they found evidence in his brain tissue of what's called Lewy body disease or Lewy body dementia, which is a progressive disease that not only attacks the motor part of your brain, which of course handles how you move and walk around, but parts of your brain that deal with cognition and perception and just how you process information. And it's hard to know, even in those last hours, even did he understand who he was, what he was doing? Was it something that was either premeditated, or was it just a kind of terrible impulse that he happened to act on? Even now, it's really hard to know or to point to which of those answers is the right one, and we may not know.
And when we found out that it was suicide, when we first heard that news, I just feel like it gave suicide a voice finally, where you didn't have to be ashamed about it, and maybe it helped other people. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it did certainly give rise in those first few days to a kind of wide-ranging conversation about mental health and depression, and that was, I think, certainly a constructive conversation to have, and did give people a sense of feeling more open about it. But I think the specifics of what Robin was actually going through, you know, at the end of his life, it was more complicated than that. And again, this is, though he did certainly have depression in his life, the disease that he had is not something that can be sort of treated, let's say, with medicine or with therapy. People can continue to live with it, but it is you know, progressive and degenerative, and so it is a little bit different than I think the initial conclusion that most people drew, you know, based on whatever information we had at the time. We didn't know all the facts until much later.
We're talking to Dave Itzkoff. He's written a book called Robin about the life of the great Robin Williams. Dave, over the years, I've met so many people who knew Robin. Some of them knew him very well. Some of them only worked with him once or twice. But the same theme comes up all the time whenever discussing Robin Williams. Genius, no doubt about it, genius, but a guy who always needed to be the funniest guy in the room. He was always on. Did you find that to be true?
It's interesting because certainly even in like one-on-one conversations with him, he was much more subdued and you know, thoughtful and contemplative. But even then, you would still see him sort of slip into a voice or a character. And this is just him and me talking, maybe in a hotel room or on a private plane. And I think there was a part of him that was just sort of how he communicated. That was part of his vocabulary at that point. And he liked making the other person laugh and putting them at ease. But I think it also made him feel more comfortable to be around somebody he didn't totally know. Being a character or doing a voice was a way to kind of protect himself a little bit.
Now, this book of yours entitled Robin, again, Dave Itzkoff on the line with us, this kind of focuses on the last few months of his life.
Well, it's the totality of his life. It's going all the way back to not only his origins, his childhood, and his parents, but a little bit of the family history before he was born. Because I think once you understand his parents in particular, you start to get a sense of how they could have only produced a child like Robin. That you know, he had a father who was very wealthy and successful as a Ford executive, also a World War II veteran, and a very sort of strict, upright man. His mother was a socialite and from a kind of southern aristocracy and very convivial, had a really wild sense of humor, not unlike Robin's. But both were kind of absent from his life at times, and especially in his upbringing. And that sense of solitude and loneliness really stuck with him throughout his life.
He idolized Jonathan Winters. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Winters is maybe the only other comedian I can think of who did anything sort of similar to or akin to what Robin would end up doing as a performer. Winters, very famously on the Jack Parr show, there's a routine that he did where Parr just gave him a stick, and Winters proceeds to just sort of make up a whole series of characters just using the stick as a prop for each of the roles. And not only did that have a big impact on, I think, Robin and how he performed, but that was one of the few things that Robin and his dad could really bond over. I mean, Robin vividly remembers watching that performance with his dad late at night and seeing his dad laugh at it, and Robin kind of thinking to himself, okay, this is a way that I can get through to my father. This is something that we can connect over. And I think that had a huge influence in steering Robin in the professional path that he took.
Years later, on Mork and Mindy, they brought Jonathan Winters in to play Mirth, the son of Mork and Mindy. And whenever you'd see them, because they would do press together, and Robin Williams just seemed to be in heaven, so in love with those moments of spending time with his idol.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because, you know, Winters, I think if you look at his life a little bit, also was as talented and as funny as he was also kind of a little bit of a wounded figure. He was diagnosed with bipolar, and he had been hospitalized a couple of times as a younger man. And the two of them became great friends, but also, you know, Winters continued to correspond with Robin throughout his life. And there was a lot of love in those letters, but also a kind of a neediness that just always wanting to see Robin, wanting Robin to come by. And, you know, I think it points to the kind of man that I think Robin became a little bit later in his own life.
And his need to seek attention, too. I mean, that makes total sense.
Absolutely.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Our guest is Dave Itzkoff. He's put together a fantastic book called Robin about the life of the great Robin Williams. We'll come back and talk more. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know, as we come to the end of this phase of our life, we find ourselves trying to remember the good times and trying to forget the bad times. Find ourselves thinking about the future. We start to worry, thinking, what am I going to do? Where am I going to be in 10 years? But I say to you, hey, look at me.
Dave Itzkoff is our guest. He has written a book called Robin about the life of the great Robin Williams. We can't say enough about the genius of Robin Williams. You know, sometimes, Dave, when I'd see him in a movie, he had a couple of different versions of Robin Williams, but sometimes he'd come out and just be as dramatic and fantastic as you could ever want an actor to be. And then you have to remind yourself, he was a classically trained actor. You shouldn't be surprised by that, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think he does get a kind of bad rap, for example, as a comedian who sort of one day woke up and decided that now he wanted to be taken seriously as an actor. He had trained for several years, not only the 3 years that he spent at Juilliard, but time that he spent at two previous colleges, really focusing on acting and training on the stage, and was in a number of regional productions. If you had been in Marin County in 1971, you could have seen him play Fagin in Oliver, which must have been totally wild.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he sort of fell backwards into the stand-up comedy in a way that was something he did when he came back to San Francisco after dropping out of Juilliard, just because San Francisco happened to be having a kind of resurgence of stand-up, and it was much more far out and less structured than the stand-up of, let's say, the 50s and 60s, and that was something that really suited Robin and that he took to. But he was always very serious as well about his acting pursuits and was sort of going on both tracks throughout his career, and I think you see that in the dramatic performances, that he had, of course, the skill and the aptitude to pull them off.
I'm feeling a little guilty because I was not a huge fan of Robin Williams' stand-up, but I loved him in his dramatic roles so much, and of course I loved Mork, but I feel a little guilty saying that out loud, but he wasn't always everyone's cup of tea with his stand-up.
No, and it really evolved. Certainly if you look at some of the earliest stand-up that he was doing, I mean, it always had that kind of rapid-fire quality, but those earliest days, they were much more sort of character pieces and just kind of quick hits. It really took him a while to kind of develop as somebody who told, I think, more personal stories about himself that he was genuinely invested in. And that very last tour of his, which was really more about experiences with alcoholism and rehab and getting divorced and having heart surgery. Again, that was very much driven by things that were happening in his life, but it took him a long time to feel, I think, comfortable enough just opening up to an audience in that way and sharing that with them.
Dave, for a while after Robin had died, if Billy Crystal was on a talk show and they'd ask him about Robin Williams, he would smile but had a tear in his eye at the same time as he would tell a story about his friendship with Robin. What was your experience? I know you interviewed Billy for the book. What did he tell you?
Well, I was really it was kind of amazing that, you know, he was so, I think, frank and open with me. I'm not giving myself much credit for that, but just that I think he was willing to sort of talk about the totality of their friendship. I mean, going all the way back to some of their earliest meetings before they became friends, when they were just performing on the same bill together, and were maybe even kind of sizing each up a little bit and looking at one another like, is this somebody that's going to be a rival of mine? Is this somebody who's going to take work away from me? Is he going to be a competitor of mine? And of course, they did become great friends, but then Billy also saw Robin in some of those last months when the symptoms and the effects of his disease were really making themselves known. And I think, Robin was one of the first people to come to him when at least he was told that he had a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. And Billy, who, knew Muhammad Ali during his life, was, trying to help Robin out and suggest to him, well, here are doctors you could see, here are centers you could be treated at, and really trying to be as good a friend to him as he could.
Someone has texted us while we're talking to you. Please tell Dave, almost finished with the book. It's terrific. Also, I enjoy following him on Twitter. Very funny.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Dave, isn't it funny how if you look at the giants of comedy over the last 15, 20, 25 years, they all had a respect for him. What you just said about Billy Crystal, I saw with Billy Crystal, but I also saw it with Whoopi Goldberg and almost anybody that ever shared a stage with him, where even them, the greatest minds in comedy, were blown away by his ability.
Yeah, I think there was something really touching and special about those sort of earliest, like the comic relief telethons that they used to do on HBO. And the three of them, Billy and Robin and Whoopi, didn't previously have a lot of experience, certainly performing as a trio. And you see them kind of figuring each other out on stage and trying to, you know, who gets to talk and who gets the spotlight in a given moment. And, you know, Robin just, I think, just was delighted to get to play off of both of them, to really feel like he had partners who were, you know, trying to be as quick and as off the wall as he was.
New York Times cultural reporter and author of Robin. His name is Dave Itzkoff. We cannot wait to read the book. We're in the process of moving studios right now, so we didn't get our copies, but we,
that's okay.
We cannot wait to read it.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, I hope it lives up to this conversation at the very least.
Dave, thanks so much. As Wendy said, we're very, very anxious, and we've heard nothing but great things. So take care of yourself and keep cranking out the great books.
Give me like four more years.
All right.
We'll talk to you then.
Thank you so much. Fair. Bye, Dave. That's Dave Itzkoff. Again, his book is called Robin. It's about the great Robin Williams. We'll take a quick break and then some news. And then Dean Richards joins us. Find out some new twists and turns in the Roseanne Barr story. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry? If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
Did you ever meet a guy that just makes you want to sing the way Dean Richards does? He just makes us want to sing.
Dean, 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 Dean.
That is, that's like some kind of harmony or something there.
That is, it's almost like harmony. Dean, somebody said last week, we got a text last week from somebody said, the lyrics to that Dean Richards theme song sounds like you guys are saying he will not talk about hard porn.
Yeah, but I will.
Yeah, that's why we wrote the lyrics that way.
but I will. I'm your all-purpose movie critic.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Dean, did you hear about this story about Roseanne Barr?
Who is this Roseanne Barr of whom you speak?
She had a show on the ABC network called Roseanne, and then she said some things that were upsetting, and she got fired.
You know, sometimes that happens to me when I'm on Ambien.
Their text was their tweet was the greatest, by the way, right?
I don't know if people know that, you know, like I've been on WGN radio since 1993. Or 94.
Yeah.
I would say about 97% of my shows I'm on Ambien.
So you're not responsible for what you say or do, obviously.
No, I think it explains a lot, really, if you think about the history of my shows through the years.
But Ambien sent out a text for people who don't know that said essentially there are some side effects to the pharmaceuticals that we manufacture, but racism is not one of them. Boy, is that brilliant.
That's a genius response to that whole...
Yeah.
A messy debacle that people are still talking about. I mean, the latest with that whole thing today now is that John Goodman finally said something about it, but very little, saying, I don't want to say anything that's going to make this worse, so I just won't say anything, meaning commenting on Roseanne's tweet. He didn't comment on that, but he, you know, a lot of people have said they feel bad for the cast members now who have lost their jobs because of Roseanne's tweet, John Goodman being one of them, but he said he's just fine. There's been talk that ABC could try to launch sort of an alternative version of the show. One of two ways is what's being speculated, that it could be the Connor family, just without Roseanne, and how they deal with that.
I know what they could call it, Dean.
What's that?
Nozan.
Found her family?
Nozan.
Nozan.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, maybe they were listening yesterday because I said perhaps, you know, she's having this knee surgery, knee replacement. I can know that. And perhaps she doesn't make it through the surgery. That was my suggestion.
Oh. My. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, that or they bring in Sandy Duncan.
Sandy Duncan.
Yeah, yeah, that'll
work. They did with Valerie's family.
Yeah, back in the day.
Right.
So, something like that, whether they replace the actor or, you know, come up, you know, with some explanation of why Roseanne's not there anymore, is one issue, or they just take the entire cast and create a whole different premise.
Oh, that's interesting, too.
But she was kind of that show.
Yeah.
Kind of was kind of the glue. Yeah, I don't think it would survive if they did it that way. Wouldn't you always, if they came up with some, you know, different premise, now all these people work in an office or something together. You know, wouldn't you constantly be thinking that, well, this is the cast of Roseanne?
Yeah.
It just wouldn't make sense.
You need the star in there. Although, Dean, remember what a huge hit Aftermath was? Giant hit.
What's it?
After MASH, remember?
I don't even know that existed.
They took Klinger and they took Father Mulcahy and they gave him After MASH, and it was not good.
And wasn't Harry Morgan, was he in that too?
He was also in it, yes. Yeah.
Herman Potter. But yeah. Also, I mean, you know, here's another example where they changed Darren's in Bewitched and really nobody blinked an eye.
Oh, that's true.
Wasn't the main character, but it was a pretty main character to switch, and the show continued for many more years after that. But here's what I learned yesterday about this.
What?
Is also kind of interesting, that because ABC had already ordered a second season of the show, that they are financially responsible for the second season of the show, which they canceled, which means they have financial commitments to the cast. They have production costs, which they have are responsible for paying. So they're basically paying for a second season anyway.
Why not try something?
Why not try something and see if it catches?
How about this, Dean? Andrew Lincoln said he was leaving Walking Dead. Why don't you put him in there in the Roseanne role and let Roseanne run Walking Dead?
Wow, yeah.
Did you take Ambien this morning?
No, why?
Because these ideas are silly.
Until they work.
Because a lot of people already think that Roseanne is Walking Dead.
So it's not a move. Not a big move. Wow.
A stretch for her at least. Anyway,
yeah. Now, what about this, Dean? Jimmy Kimmel said, we need to show her some compassion right now, that she's troubled, that there could be some mental illness involved there. What do you think of that?
It's entirely possible, because this one tweet is not an isolated case. She's had other tweets that have been called racist, out and out racist. She herself said that it was egregious. I mean, you know, people are trying to make this political now, and you know, trying to make this more than just a hate-filled racist tweet. She herself said, "Don't defend me. This was egregious, and this was wrong." But she's got a history of it. I don't know if you've seen the photos that have been floating around of her dressed as Hitler holding a tray of burnt gingerbread men.
Yeah.
That's disturbing. Now, I understand that she did it for a satirical magazine, but it's still very disturbing to, you know, if I was the survivor of a Holocaust survivor, if I was a relative, I would find that piece of satire very, very disturbing.
Boy, you really have to go to extreme lengths to shock people anymore. You know what I mean? Like with everybody on YouTube and social media, you have to go completely off the deep end to shock someone, and it seems like that's what she was trying to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, she said it was a joke that went bad. Kathy Griffin had a similar case.
Yeah. Although,
what Kathy Griffin did was not racist, but it was certainly distasteful. When she, you know, did her joke that went bad of holding the severed head of President Trump.
Yeah, that wasn't funny either.
The whole discussion now, I mean, Bill might have some interesting opinions on how far is too far in comedy. Comedians should push the envelope a little bit. Comedians should make you think a little bit. But, you know, what is that line where it's too much?
Dean, does the Hitler photograph, the picture of Roseanne Barr dressed as Hitler taking the gingerbread cookies out of the oven, is it more or less offensive or equally as offensive knowing that Roseanne herself is Jewish? Does that change the story at all or not at all?
Well, I think it's part of that, but also it was, my understanding is that series of pictures like that were taken for a satirical magazine, something like, it wasn't The Onion, but it was something like The Onion.
Yeah.
So, no, for me, knowing that it was, that, you know, she just didn't dress up as Hitler one day and decided to do it, that it was intended to make a satirical point, makes it a little bit different. But, you know, it's quite different than a tweet which is just out and out equating African-American people with apes.
Yeah, you can't defend that, can you? It's impossible to defend that.
No, that is just, you know, people are saying, well, what about this one and what about that one? It's become so popular now to say, well, what about this? And, you know, that, you know, say that, well, Jimmy did it, so I can do it. You know, that's thinking. This was a statement that she made, not her first, that compared a race of people, demeaning a race of people, comparing them to animals. To me, there's nothing funny about that.
No. Right.
It's not satirical. There's nothing funny about something like that.
Isn't it interesting, Dean, that in the last year to year and a half, we've seen so many careers gone in the blink of an eye? Like, it used to be, if somebody said or did something that was horrible, it took a little time for it to weigh out. But now, you know, one day you hear the name of a guy who's done something or a woman who's done something, and then the next day, they may never work again.
Yeah. Is that because of social media, do you think?
I think it is.
Social media is going to be the death of all of us. It really will.
Right? If it had only stopped at Pong games.
Right. All right, let's take a...
If the world had only stopped at that, life would be better for us.
Oh, that's so true. It's so true.
Dean Richards, life would be a dream.
Shadoon. We'll take a quick...
Shaboom.
I say Shadoon. We'll take a quick break. Dean Richards is our guest. He's in transit. He's going somewhere. He may be showing up at your house. If he comes to your house, let him in. He's hungry. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dean Richards is our guest. Dean, before we get to this week's movie or movies.
Did you want to know where I am?
Yeah, where are you? Where are you?
I may do the segment. Nobody is really doing anything like that.
What?
Wait, where are you?
Where is he? What, you know, what's he doing?
Where's Waldo?
Charles Corey. I'm on Lakeshore Drive right now, headed downtown to see the new Mr. Rogers documentary.
You're breaking up.
Won't You Be My Neighbor is the name of
Bill,
it.
Bill, you were just inquiring about that.
We've got the man who's behind it coming on with us next week.
Oh, good, good. So I'll be able to tell you about the movie next week. But
Lakeshore Drive, you stink.
Uh-oh.
Fewer people should be going shirtless on a daily.
Well, yeah, that's a given.
Myself included.
Dean, put your shirt on.
I took my shirt off, but
yeah, it's a sign of the times. Dean, real quick, before we get to this week's movie or movies, Wendy went and saw Solo, and I know that your review of it was less than favorable. You weren't thrilled with it, but why do you think it's not doing anywhere near as well as other Star Wars movies? What's behind that?
I think part of it is Star Wars oversaturation. There used to be a time when we would have to wait years before we get a new Star Wars movie. Now they're coming out at least every year.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. But also, I when the reviews came out, they were, you know, fairly, I don't really think they were bad reviews, but they, you know, nobody was really blown away very much by this.
But didn't you think of any movies that are ever made, the Star Wars movies are almost critic-proof? That we'll read the reviews, but still, if people are going to see the Star Wars movies, they're going to see the Star Wars movies, usually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it opened to in excess of $100 million. It's not like it was a failure by any means. But people were not going crazy over this one. Like they have in the past, and I think it's one because the movie, I thought, played it kind of safe. Doesn't mean it's bad, but I thought it played kind of safe, and that Star Wars movies come out all the time now, so it's not that big of a deal that a Star Wars movie opened. I didn't hear what Wendy thought of the movie.
I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite Star Wars movies, and I'm not so steeped in Star Wars as my husband, so you could go in there not knowing much about the Star Wars universe and really not be lost. And I thought the guy who played Han Solo, which I'm regretful, I always forget his name, I thought he did do a good job. I understand Harrison Ford's shoes are tough to fill, but this is a younger Han Solo who hasn't built up all the cockiness that the older Han Solo did.
Yeah, Alden Ehrenreich is his name. And, you know, I agree. I thought he did an okay job with the whole movie. I'm glad. I heard from plenty of people who liked it better than I did, so I'm always happy to hear when that happens. And nice to know that you get drunk before you go see a movie.
Do you think
I did, Dean, get a beer at the theater.
Dean, do you think that in retrospect, having Ed Asner play Chewbacca was a bad idea?
What? I can't think of anybody. To me, it's about time.
Yep.
I've said all the time, if there is a role that cries out, Lou Grant.
Yep.
Lou Grant. It's Chewbacca. So,
right.
Mr. Baca.
Now that they finally pulled the trigger.
Right.
All right. We have two, maybe 3 minutes. So, what did you want to review?
Adrift. Right.
I want to see this.
Yeah. There's really only one major movie that's opening this weekend. It's called Adrift. It stars Shailene Woodley, who you remember from Divergent and The Fault in My Stars, Fault in Our Stars, among other things, and Sam Claflin, who was in Hunger Games and a very familiar face, English actor. This is based on a true story, something that really happened in 1983. Two free thinkers, adventure seekers, meet in Tahiti, fall in love, and they decide to go on a sailing adventure from Tahiti all the way to San Diego. While they're in the middle of this sort of around-the-world trip, almost around-the-world trip, they encounter one of the world's worst hurricanes to ever hit. Again, true story. It destroys the boat. It leaves them severely injured, tossed and turned, and it becomes a story of survival and determination and trying to find a way to stay alive as they are adrift for something like, I think it was 60 days, 40 or 60 days. It's not like any Lost at Sea movie that we have seen before. Normally, I cannot stand movies like this because they're all the same. There's always the obligatory shark scene. There's always, like certain scenes that always happen in these movies. This movie strikes an original tone. It does not have any of that. One thing I have to give them credit for, also, movies like this always make me nauseous. Literally, I get motion sick, seasick from watching movies like this, and I didn't this time. But what I really liked was the chemistry between the two stars. I liked the story of determination, and I liked the love story that went with this. But this is a movie about female empowerment. The protagonist in this movie is a woman who is self-sufficient and smart and courageous, and it's a powerful story that way. And I really liked it. I gave it a Dean's List B.
Very nice.
I can't wait to see it.
Very, very nice. Dean, thanks so much. We hope that wherever you're going, you get there safely and that you'll call us when you get there so we don't worry.
I'll ring the phone twice and then hang up. No, I got there safely.
Saved on the charges.
Are you going to change into your gym shoes when you get to the Mr. Rogers movie and put your sweater on?
Yes, I am.
All right, good to know.
So I'm shirtless right now, as I told you.
Oh, yeah.
Long Lake Shore Drive. So I'll put my shirt back on and a sweater.
Just put the cardigan on with no shirt.
Yeah, that's a good luck.
It's itchy, but it'll look good on you.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
Bye, guys.
That's Dean Richards. Of course it is. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Steve will come in, and he'll tell us what he's got on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.